You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, Alex.
Hey, Nick.
You know what I was thinking, man? It's the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've really made it. We've made it. You know, we made it from, you know, the top of 2020, which was just crazy. Right around February, March, things got insane, and now we are at the end. And you know, it's not like things are going to get any less insane anytime soon. But we've done this year. We really have survived, and you know, got to take stock in that. I just wanted to say, man, you know, I'm glad that we are friends. I'm glad that we are surviving this thing. I'm glad that I've had you to call on through this crazy time. And you know, I just wanted to give you kind of an opening to thank me back. Okay.
Nick?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nicholas.
Yes.
My friend.
Yeah.
The light of my life.
Yeah.
The hand in the shadow that leads me from darkness.
Yeah. This is beautiful.
Thank you.
See that? That's an opening.
Just kidding, you fucker.
Little justice. Fuck yeah.
That's it. Welcome to Little Justice 20.
Well, that won't happen again, just so you know.
No,
it's a one-time thing.
It's a one-time thing because you can't think of anything
I just,
to say.
You know, it didn't feel right. I'm so happy we're friends.
That's it.
And I'm so happy that we get to share in this thing that we've created together.
And I'm so happy that you're fucking alive, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Surviving was a good part of 2020.
Yeah, surviving. A lot of people did not.
Luckier every day, yeah. It's getting even worse out there. It's like... It's been so bad that I kind of have tuned out the news in general, which has been a nice relief, right, to get away from politics, especially like 2019 and 2020 politically were, oh my God, were terrible. So it's been nice not listening to the news because I don't have to deal with that. But I've also every now and then I'll check in and just see that it's getting worse out there, that hospitals are overflowing. There's not enough oxygen getting to these hospitals. There's not enough beds open. Oh my goodness. So I hope that 2020 really is, I hope getting through this year really does mean that we can start reversing course.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's what it has to mean. And I think that really what it, you know, it's going to come down to some strong messaging.
Yeah.
You know, from our friends in the White House and, because really what we're looking at, you know, again, I hate to give Governor Cuomo too much credit, but I do love what he says often about, you know, the idea of you tell me what you're going to do in the next coming days, and I will tell you what the numbers are going to look like, right?
Mm-hmm.
The idea that it is a function of what we do. And
yeah.
I think that if people knew they had that, you know, again, if the government would support its people, and if people had the ability to stay home and not have to worry about money, that would be, I think, a very big change of course. So, you know, I
think it would. Yeah. It's been frustrating seeing it's been very enlightening.
Yeah.
And it ties into the movie I chose today is sort of this enlightenment to reality. Like you've never had to think about before actually what purpose a government should serve and what it owes its people, right? It can't be bigger than the people. It needs to be the sum of the people, right? We pay taxes contributing to a system that is supposed to keep us safe and secure and comfortable, right? Not only keep our roads flat and our economy moving, but also our health and our safety and our well-being physically and financially. The naysayers rush to say, well, you know, you just work harder. Like the work ethic doesn't work if you're not allowed to work.
Yeah.
And it shows this gaping hole in responsibility that the government is, oh my God. And now they just get to pass it off to Biden and they'll be complaining all next year about how it's his fault somehow.
Exactly. And that's why Georgia is so important. If you are listening to Georgia, which I know we have some fans.
Georgia.
Please, please vote. Please vote January.
Please.
But you know, that actually, yeah, it ties into what our theme is, as Alex so astutely put it. Today we are saying good the fuck bye to 20.
Goodbye. What are we going to title it? I haven't seen the title yet.
I think it's it would be like the Good Riddance 2020 movie.
The Good Riddance, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's like washing clean.
The cleanse.
Is it about getting rid of 2020 or is it about moving into 2021?
Moving in 2021. I think that's actually the better way to put it. The first movie of 2021. What is the movie that you watch that cleanses you of 2020? Because theoretically, when people are listening to this, it could very well be 2021.
It could very well. It probably will be, actually, given the speed of my editing lately.
Yeah.
In fact, it will be.
Yeah. So let's just say, so, you know, hey, first of all, happy
welcome
2021.
To 2021.
Yeah, exactly. We're so glad to be here with you.
You made it.
How do you, before we get into the movie picks, how do you, mm-hmm. I mean, how do you feel? Like, how do you feel going forward? I feel
optimistic. I think this month, especially, I think it was tied into maybe seasonal stuff. Like usually around winter, it starts to get a little more, the universe starts to get a little more oppressive.
Mm-hmm.
You're inside a little more, the sun's going down, you know, earlier. There's, you know, the holidays are lovely, but in terms of money and everything, it can become stressful. And especially this year, where the benefit you get from spending money at the holidays is that you spend it on and with family.
Yes.
And around family. And so to be deprived of the holiday experience, but still have the holiday, I think that played into it. For some, and I've had this conversation with a lot of people, I think November, December specifically, at the end of COVID or at the end of the year of COVID, everything built on, and the election and everything, it's just, it was the wall. It was really like waking up feeling like crap and working really hard. I started exercising. That's how bad I felt.
Wow.
I literally bought exercise equipment and I've been working out to try to shake off this malaise.
Look at you.
And if you know me, you know that that's huge. That's a desperate effort.
I've only known that to happen in your life maybe once before. There was a moment once before where you really got into it and you started, you had like a bench press, and I think, was it in your backyard or something?
It was, yeah. Well, okay. So there were two times. One time, I was living with my brother in Venice. And he and his wife, his now wife, they had been together and they had broken up temporarily. So he was in like a, I need to, you know, do whatever I can to not feel this way mode. So we bought a weight bench and we were working out, but I never really like committed to it. And then right before I met my wife, I was single, newly single, and feeling like, okay, I'm going to change myself and I'm going to be better. And I went, it was probably like a month and a half, 2 months, and I really went hard at it. I got a gym membership, no idea what the hell I was doing.
Yeah.
And went hard at it. And then as soon as I met my now wife, and I knew that things were really hitting it off, I was like, okay, maybe I don't need to be pushing this so hard. And then as things do, it fell off again. So this is another dark moment.
Yeah.
It seems a dark moment solved through bouts of exercise.
See, and that's, I think it's so important, you know, to recognize those patterns, because isn't that crazy? You know, these things that we should be doing all the time, We like,
right.
We do it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, like we should work out. like, yeah. even if it's just getting up and going for a little walk, like a walk is great, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, man.
And it's hard to do. I live, you know, it's a 30-minute walk to the ocean for me. I should be doing that every day, right? Like I should be getting up and walking to the ocean and I don't. We don't for some reason.
You know?
It's so easy to just sit here. And I think, you know, your reality starts to reframe, right? Life is change.
Yes.
Everything is change, negative or positive or neutral. Like there is such a thing as neutral change where like it's kind of what it is where you're inside so much. You do the same things every day so much. You get lost in these little screen addictions and food addictions and things that you just do that you don't realize you're doing so repetitiously that it becomes the world. It is what the world is.
Yeah.
And I think that can lead you very mysteriously, very trickily down the wrong paths. And then you have to make these desperate efforts to get out of it.
There are some good things that come out of it, though, and I think there's an innovation that can come out when you know when you're forced into a box and when you have to adapt to that box, right? And that's so much of what this past year was adapting to this new box. Mm. And one of the innovations that came out, have you heard of this fucking Clubhouse app?
Clubhouse.
You heard, this is your first time hearing about this?
Yeah, I've never heard of this.
Okay, so let me throw some.
Should I download it?
Well, you can't yet. You have to be. So right now, you have to be invited. They say if you look at the download, it says we're in the beta testing phase. It's interesting. It's an interesting app, and I want to talk about it because I'm of split mind. It is like in the spirit of what we're talking about. It's definitely something that has come out of this year that I'm like, yo, this is actually really cool. And you know, there's so much about this that can work, but I feel like just as anything, you know, when they opened Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, I'm sure that ride broke down a bunch, but Pirates Didn't Eat the Tourists, name that movie. This app definitely has some.
Wait, what was the movie? It sounds so familiar.
Jurassic Park, come on.
Yeah,
John, when the Pirates of the Caribbean broke down, the Pirates Didn't Eat the Tourists.
Yes, you're right.
Come on. I only got so many.
See how bad I am at this game.
Listen, dude.
How do we start a movie podcast based on guessing movies when I can't even get a Jurassic Park line?
Dude, Sarah throws me references all the time that I, and like things that I should know.
This goes right over my head. Well, as soon as I don't know it, I start thinking about the fact that I don't know it instead of actually like thinking about what it is.
Yeah. You're just like, I should fucking know this. And you're not
thinking
about
it. I should know this. It's Jurassic Park. Yeah, so what is it? Explain it to me.
So it's interesting. It is an app that is basically, I guess the best way to say it is a bunch of group phone calls. So like it essentially, you go in and there is like, it's like a clubhouse. Like there are different little clubs happening, different topics, and like it's what the kind of the beauty of it is it connects people across all spaces, statuses, forms. So like you have, you know, Ava DuVernay in a chat room with, you know, the random dude from Georgia just starting to get into movies and just like and able to just talk to each other. Like it literally just opens up these rooms, you know, and you can just like you go into like a different like a maybe like a chat room and there's a moderator and you can raise your hand if you want to speak and they'll call on you and you can say your piece. And, you know, some of these chat rooms are like 50 people and some of these chat rooms are like 1,000 people. It's very interesting. And like there's some, you know, I was in a room this morning that they were talking about, it was black Brits talking about Meghan Markle, and fascinating conversation, like a conversation that I would never get to listen in on, you know, because I'm not from the UK, you know, and just the things they were saying were just like, oh my God, never thought about that. There's also like quantum physicists were having a conversation about like, you know, the future of quantum physics and all this stuff. And that was amazing. There's also people where you're like, the topic is literally like how to get more hoes in 2021. And like, it's just ratchet people just moderating these things. And I think that my only, you know, not that they asked for my input, but the input that I would give them is, you know, please vet your moderators, because these rooms,
they can get pretty twisted. Well, I mean, it sounds, it's like an internet chat room.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's like audio. It's interesting the way in which these sort of like disruption social media companies find ways to take something like Twitter, right? Is just people updating their status, right? Which had existed before Twitter, and continues to exist on. So to turn it into something unique, just somebody submitting 200 letters, and that's it. That's all it is somehow a unique thing to Twitter. So to have it, it's just a chat room.
Yep.
Right. Is there even video involved, or is it all just audio?
Just audio. So you see,
chat room. Like, how do you evolve that concept? So that's interesting to me.
I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see where this goes. And I'm also like, again, I'm terrified of it, but I'm also intrigued.
Do they play the celebrity angle of it? Is it kind of like cameo?
Yeah, that's, well, it's in, I mean, it's in the sense that like you can just talk with celebrities. Like,
yeah,
it's just it's like a you know, communal chat room where you can just listen to the game go off about like bullshit. You mean like it's weird and it's cool. Like I always forget how to pronounce his name, but I love him so much. Lakeith Stanfield or Lakeith Stanfield.
I think it's Lakeith. Maybe not.
Was in there a couple days ago, saying some stuff, and I think I wasn't in the room, but apparently got himself in trouble or something. I don't know what happened, but like, it's just, it's interesting. It's my thing. And I said this to Sarah, I was like, I'm waiting for the person who realizes, ooh, we can record these conversations, because like, if you thought 150 characters would trip you up, or 180 characters, just wait till you are just able to just talk off the cuff and somebody can take what you say. And
edit it. So we're moving closer and closer to this reality of literally everything you say and do. Not only is it caught and recorded, but you're the one recording it, right? It's voluntary.
Yes.
Which is what Twitter is. Like, why would you, you know, the way I always think about it is like 100, 150 years ago, imagine asking someone, hey, if there was a way for every single person on earth to say what's on their mind all the time, and you would just be bombarded by it 24/7, would that be something you'd be interested in? And they would think that that's like hell. Yes. That would sound like hell. Why would I want to know what everybody's thinking all the time? And this is what we're starting to live in, is like your existence in society is commodified and branded and broadcast all the time, and it's up to you to keep it up. And it's like, yeah, people are gonna, oh my god,
we gotta
manage, you know. It's it's amazing the technology that's there.
Yeah,
I think it's really just, we haven't even begun, even with all the turmoil throughout the world right now, all the stuff that Facebook's caused and Twitter's caused and all that, we haven't begun to scratch the surface of the consequences of
this is gonna get really bad.
This is going to get really, really bad. So yeah. I'm hoping now that they're starting, you know, all these government officials are starting to kind of whisper out that the aliens are actually real.
Yep.
And the Galactic Federation's a real thing, and we're going to ease our way into that, and that'll take our minds off everything else.
I actually think that that's the next step. Once we know that aliens are real, I think everything shifts.
I would hope that everything shifts, or it's like a fun week of everybody posting memes about it, and then we're just used to it.
Yeah.
At this point, I wouldn't be surprised if we just got used to it really, really quickly.
Oh my God, we got to get over ourselves. Well, that's what happens in 2021, is we get over ourselves.
I hope so. So yeah. So in this new year, you know, as we've seen the consequences of inaction, as we've seen the consequences of division, what are your hopes for 2021? What do you hope to see brought out?
Well, you know, I think back to that Cuomo quote, you know, you tell me what you do and I'll tell you what the numbers are. I'm thinking of it less about what I hope to see and what I'm going to work towards. And I want to definitely work towards a safer community, and all the things, you know, that we talk about, you know, all the things that, that you could put on a bumper sticker, world peace, all these, you know, these ideas that for some reason seem frou-frou, but really are really good ideas. You know, how do I continue to just make the people around me that much happier, mm-hmm. And more educated, and educate myself and humble myself? Really what I want from 2021, you know, I'm at an interesting place. I'll be honest with you guys. You know, I'm at an interesting place right now because, you know, this industry that I have worked for so long in is shut down and has been shut down all year, and, you know, is now making steps to come back, and that's beautiful. And I cannot wait. The first day back on stage is going to be so powerful, and I truly am living for that. Like, I'm living for that moment. But it has given me a lot of insight to, like, what do I love? What is it that I love? And I don't think that I will ever not act. I love acting, and whether it's on stage or on screen, I want to keep doing it. But I love writing. I've been writing since I was a child, and you know, I recently changed agencies, changed representation. And that was a big thing for me because I'd been with my agent for 10 years and this, I love my agent. And I, if anybody was looking for their first agent, I would throw his name in the hat in a heartbeat. He is that good. But it was time to go bigger, and it was time to be with an agency who could at least get me in the door in terms of both my, I mean, my, definitely with my acting, but certainly with my writing. And so that's kind of what I'm hoping for personally, is just a new direction career-wise, just like another door opening. I've kind of, in terms of Broadway, I've kind of done a lot of what I wanted to do. And I'm happy to keep doing it. And I, again, I miss it so much, but I'm like, look, there's whole other worlds out there. Not that are any better or worse, but just that, like, mm-hmm. you know, I haven't explored yet, and things that especially, like, I look, you know, me and Sarah have been rewatching Stranger Things, and, I never saw season 3, so I'm watching this with fresh eyes, and I actually like it a lot more than I thought I would. I thought the whole Russian subplot would really turn me off, and it hasn't yet. I really, there are things about season 3 that I'm like, what the hell are y'all doing? Please figure this out. But that subplot has not bothered me. But the thing that I look at these kids, and they are kids, right? Even as they've grown over 3 seasons and hit puberty and grown taller and thinner and all this stuff, these are babies, and I'm like, wow, I am not that anymore. Do you mean, like, there was a moment watching, we talk about Jurassic Park. There was a moment last time I watched Jurassic Park where I was like, I'm closer. When I first started watching this movie, I was Tim and Lex's age. And now I'm closer to Dr. Grant's age than I am to Tim and Lex's age. That's crazy to me. And so it's like, yeah, okay, I'm out of our 20s into our 30s. What do we want to do? And not that we're old, but like, what is there something we want to pursue differently?
Do you think that I would call it freedom, although it's kind of, it's the opposite, but it is, you know, the freedom of quarantine, right? Of having to stop your life suddenly and the trajectory of where you were headed and sit with yourself and find out who you are without the momentum and the energy of going out every day and doing what you've been doing. Do you think that it's been long enough now that it's the main contributing factor to wanting to pivot? Like, do you think you would have hit this point had you not had the 9 months to a year to digest all of this and think about it?
No, you know, it was so funny because I was trying to pivot anyway. I actually don't mean pivot. I mean, pivot is what I've had to do in 2020. Pivot is certainly, you know, because I'm a professor now and I'm, you know, doing virtual concerts and I'm writing scripts for people and all this stuff. So that's what I've had to do. But the whole point of coming into, you know, or the great thing about booking Ain't Too Proud was going to be that I had this platform, this show that was literally my show. That was literally me out front doing the damn thing. And and was like a walking billboard for my work, so that, you know, people who were in the other industries that I wanted to be in, TV, film, could come see this show, and we could, you know, I could take them out for drinks afterwards. That's kind of how it was done, you know, back in, you know, that was kind of the beauty of being the lead of a show. Mm-hmm. So you know, before the pandemic, it was going to be a broadening of what I was still doing. And I still think it will be, because again, Broadway's not dead. Broadway's coming back. So, you know, I think that it will be this kind of add-on to what I already do. That said, I think that I've now had space to really dig into it, at least artistically. You know, and I think that the thing that this year has given me in terms of that has been sending my stuff out and getting coverage back, and coverage from people that I really, you know, look up to and love, and knowing that my work is good, knowing that this thing, you know, I didn't go to, you know, you Alex, you know, have this understanding of film that I think, you know, you were making films in your basement when you were, I remember seeing the film that you made, you know, in high school, right, when you were a kid, but you went to school for film, and I didn't go to film school. And so my film school has literally just been like voracious reading and watching. And there's still things that I don't know and understand. And so it was just very affirming to be like, okay, I actually can do this. Like, I can do this well, and I can, and not just writing plays, but I can write a pilot or a feature script, and it makes sense, and my writing excites people, and, you know, am I getting into the rooms I want to get into right now? No, not at all. But there is a reason why I should keep doing this. So that's been exciting. And I think that no, without this year, I don't think that I'm able to put as much into the ideas as I have been. And I say that very, like, here's the other thing I think with both of us, Alex, again, and we said this at the beginning of this podcast, like, we're very fortunate where this thing for us has largely been having the space to do the things we want to do.
Right.
Right. There are people for whom this year has been everything I want to do is on hold because now I'm in survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
And we, you know, I think that there is I'm very grateful for the fact that it has never been a question of how am I going to eat? Do you know what I mean? It might be money is tight, but it's not how I'm going to eat,
right?
You know, and that I think is something to really just take stock of when moving forward, because it's been real, man. And
it's been real. This is one of the hopes that I have, one of the visions I have for coming out of this, right? Because ideally, the vaccine comes along, and within a couple months, we've reclaimed the hospitals, and we've gotten people vaccinated, and we can move in, with a desperate need. You know, we've really punched a giant hole in the world system, in the same way that you know, World War I gave and the Spanish flu came out the other end. That was the Roaring Twenties, right?
Yeah.
It was people, you know, realizing suddenly how important a lot of stuff was to focus on, you know, and I really think, and especially now with who's going to be at the top of the political chain, that there's going to be a lot of investment and opportunity. And I think we're as dark as it is right now, if everybody can just hold in for another 6 months, 8 months, just hang in there, I really do think that we're going to spring back hard and loud.
I agree.
And I'm really looking forward to what comes out of that.
Yeah. I think that's just the beauty, but the beautiful thing about that prediction is it really is just the natural way.
It's the natural thing.
It's, you know, you purge yourself, right? You go through this moment of turmoil, and then on the other side of that, and that's seen in nature, and that's seen in history. And I think you're absolutely right. I think there is going to be such a big push to just enjoy life. But we just got to hang in. And we
got to hang in
and vote Georgia, vote, please. For the love of God, please vote.
Oh God, please vote.
Yeah. Please vote. Please. Yeah, man. So, you know, we're gonna get there by hook or by crook, but you know, it's definitely that moment. That's and in that spirit, I mean, that's kind of what I think, you know, back to our theme, our movie theme of the week. Yes. Movie themes. I just want to talk like that. Just like,
just you know, should we do an ASMR episode?
We
have these nice microphones.
For ASMR. Is that doing it for you? We're gonna need a bigger boat. Must go faster. I hate that. I hate ASMR. People, like, I get it. You know, everyone has their kink, and like, go for it and enjoy it. But it is creepy to me. It really does not make
me feel. Well, that's the thing, is to me it feels like a kink, but I feel like to a younger generation who like watches YouTube and like listen, like it's a cultural thing.
Is it really? People like that?
Somehow. Oh yeah. Jesus. Have you ever like dug deep on these YouTube channels, man? Well, YouTube has, I don't know what it's doing to the younger generation, but the stuff out there is weird.
Well, mukbang is as weird as I go. The one which is,
what that is.
Oh, it's just like people eating. It's like,
oh yeah. So that kind of thing, right? Like, yeah. Like you know, in our generation, we know that our parents would look at what we were doing and say, how could anyone ever do that? And why, where do you find that interesting? And I guess we're just old, because I look at some of the stuff that kids are into now. But the thing is, it's all very connected, right? It's, yeah. It's the ability for kids. You're not just sharing things with your friends, right? You're sharing and being shared with by everybody,
yeah,
in your age group and outside of it. And people trying to manipulate that to make money, and people getting interested in that, like all this stuff. And it's creating millions upon millions of sub communities,
yes,
that grow so fast, and the lingo grows so it's fascinating. I'm sure there's got to be some new science of modern cultural archaeology
and anthropology,
right? There has to be people documenting and analyzing the movements of these cultural trends, because it's happening light speed right now.
Well, and it's also crazy because you don't even have to document them per se, because they are documented. I think
that's what I'm saying. That's why it's archaeology, because it's going to be looking at what exists, like going back even in just the last year, an analysis of all the existing trends of phrases and videos and viral things and hashtags and you know, memes, and there's an infinite number of thing, you know, maybe we could just feed it into an AI and have them tell us who we are.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that. That how fast this is going to speed us all up. We should do an episode on that.
It's a brand new world. It's about shedding this old world identity, moving into a new one. Which brings me to my movie choice.
Please.
A movie podcast. Remember,
we do talk about movies at some point on here. Mostly we talk about like porn.
But yeah. Now we're going to talk about movies.
Talk to me about the movie.
So. I went through, and I was talking to Emine about it. I said, it's not a movie about a new year, right? The theme is maybe like this new year. What do you watch at the beginning of a new year? But it's not a new year movie. I thought it has to be the only thing that this movie has to be is a comedy in the classic sense. It has to start one way where there is something wrong.
Yep.
And it has to end positively.
Yes.
You have to be living in a situation and break yourself out of it into a new hopeful situation from it. You have to find the hope from the wreckage of what came before.
Yes.
And as I was browsing through all the lists upon lists, I thought, oh, maybe I can, you know, if it's about me personally, what would it be? Like what would fill me with hope? And I came upon this one, and I'm like, it shouldn't fit, but it does perfectly. And it's actually perfect. And when I watched it, it just affirmed, yes, this is how I can emotionally relate to what has happened over the last year and where I see this next year coming up.
Love it.
So all I'm going to do, is read you. We open, it's the studio credit. And then we open on a man talking to a camera in an interview. And this is what he says. We've become tired of watching actors give us phony emotions.
Good for you.
Good for you.
Special effects.
While the world he inhabits is counterfeit, there's nothing fake about Truman himself.
Oh my God,
no
I love this.
No cue cards. Oh. It's not always Shakespeare,
but it's genuine. It's a life.
I'm not gonna make it. You're gonna have to go on without me. No way, mister. You're going to the top of this mountain, broken legs and all.
We find many viewers leave him on all night for comfort.
You're crazy, you know that?
Well, for me, there is no difference between a private life and a public life. My life is my life, is the Truman Show. The Truman Show is a lifestyle. It's a noble life. It is a truly blessed life.
Yeah, tell me something I don't know.
Number one, all the right, fact that I can
you
recall.
Know that. How oh. can you quote
because,
that?
Because I can't tell you. I'm so happy you brought this. I was looking for an opportunity to bring this movie, and now I feel so stupid that I didn't think about that, because it is truly, I honestly think that The Truman Show is like the perfect encapsulation of the 90s into aughts transition. Mm. And a, you know, just that, you know, in just a crazy way that the perfect metaphor for what happened to us, because that's who we are now. That mm-hmm. is literally who we are. We are all Truman in our own way. And the decision to do what Truman does, please talk about it, because I could go on about Truman Show for hours.
Oh, it sounds like you have the same idea about it I do. I mean, because there's an obvious subtext to it of the fake of media, of commercialism, you know, productizing everything, and yep. how you get trapped in this bubble, which I think we're still, you know, as harped upon as it's been over the last 20, 30 years. And I think that's why they set Truman's life is kind of set in this 50s-esque world, even though outside the bubble it's later. I think we've dealt with this commercialism idea that we're just, yes. we're being sold to our whole lives, and everything's fake, and we need to break out and find the real world. But I think in the light of what's happened this year and where we're moving, it puts it casts a new whole new light on it, where it's not just the products, and it's not just the television and the fakeness. It's that we have been, there's been a screen that's been pulled back into how we've built this system, right? There's so many blind spots that we have to how our political system works, how our healthcare system works. We assume that there is a goodness that something is working, right? That there can't be so many malicious actors. There can't be the way things are. Maybe I don't understand it, but it's working. And so to go through a period of time where you realize it's not working. There are the people in charge of making sure that everything is okay are looking out for themselves, right? And the systems that are in place to make sure that everything's okay are being run by the people looking out for themselves. And I think so many people, and it's divided us as we've gone through this growing pain period of realizing of the principles we've committed ourselves to and the institutions that we've committed ourselves to. We realize they're not what they're supposed to be. They're not what they are. They operate differently. They operate maliciously. They operate for profit, basically. And I think now we're entering into a period as we heal from the immediate crisis, right? There's the immediate problems that we need to solve. And as we heal from those, we're going to be looking at how was that so bad? What was that?
Yep.
In the same way that Truman, in the Truman Show, you know, he goes through a long period and it takes a lot to get him to understand what's going on. But as soon as he does, there's nothing to do but break through the barrier and get out to something new.
It feels like the whole world revolves around me somehow.
It's a lot of world for one man, Truman. sure that's not wishful thinking? You wishing you'd made something more out of yourself?
Everybody seems to be in on it.
I've been your best friend since we were 7 years old, Truman. Only way you and I ever made it through school was by cheating off each other's test papers. I know that things haven't really worked out for either of us like we used to dream they would. I know that feeling when it's like everything's slipping away and you don't want to believe it, so you look for answers somewhere else, but
the point is, I'd gladly walk in front of traffic for you.
Well, the point is, I would gladly step in front of traffic for you, Truman.
There's yeah. You can't put Pandora back in the box.
No, and that's go ahead.
Well,
no,
yeah.
I just love that metaphor for this movie because I think that's exactly one of the, there's two moments, and this is spoilers, by the way. So if you have not seen Truman Show, pause here, go watch the Truman Show, tweet at us at Lil Justin.
If you have seen it, pause here, go watch it.
Yeah.
We'll still be here when you get back.
But the two moments I think are the best moments or one of the most, this is two of the most clever moments in the movie are when the light falls because what I you know, so in context for those of you who haven't seen the movie, so this movie is about a man who his entire life since he was born has been a TV show. It's the first reality show. It is a show that there's a camera in his car, in his bedroom, in his school, in his clothes. We, unbeknownst to him, he is living this life that is just being surveilled from every angle, everything. And even his friends are actors and everything about his world is fake. And so what I think is so great about that moment, you know, in the hero's journey, you have the call to action, right? Where the hero gets beckoned into a larger world. Truman's call to action is literally chance. If that shit hadn't happened, do you know what I mean? It would have been something, right? Because we established that Truman is a curious person. But if it, you know, what happens is a light fixture falls from the rigging for, you know, from the sky.
The light, one of the stars that's supposed to be a star in the sky, it's got a tape on the side that says like Canis Major or something like that. Cause I was like, that's unrealistic that like, there's not singular lights illuminating the sky, but it's a star.
It's a star.
It's a shooting star. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just falls to earth and like almost smacks him in the head, just lands in the street in front of him. And that starts an unraveling. First of all, he starts thinking about moments from his childhood that didn't make sense, but now makes sense in the context of a narrative show, and then starts pulling on the fabric of his wife and of his best friend and these people that he trusted. And, you know, I just want to give a quick shout out to Laura Linney, who does a
so good.
Oh my God. She's brilliant. Just I think what's beautiful about, you know, or the gift that you give the actors in this movie is that on one layer, they have to play the characters that they play. But on the other hand, on the other layer, they have to play the actors living in this world. And Laura Linney,
you're an actor playing an actor acting.
Exactly. And Laura Linney is like the best at giving you, as you just see her start to fall apart as she like can't stand under the pressure of Truman's investigation. Yeah. And like the actress is freaking out, but the character has to stay in control. And it's just like this, it's fucking brilliant. But, you know, I love that it's a malfunction. It's the fact that you couldn't build this world without seams. That's where he starts to unzip it. And at the end, the fact that we don't know where he goes, right? And he gets through this big storm, gets to the edge of his world, goes up a flight of stairs and steps through the door, knowing that he's stepping out of his TV show. And Christoph, right, played by Ed Harris, is yelling at him to stay inside the world and stay with him. And Truman says his famous line.
In case I don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
You know, like he and he just waves and he just leaves and it was it's
perfect. Yeah, perfect. I mean, and what I realize now is what it takes, like following his motivation the whole time, like seeing it really is a character taking complete control, right? In a situation where he could there's no backsliding in his determination. It only grows and grows and grows to the point where he cannot turn back, right? There's the point where he knows that other people might think he's crazy, that he should think that he's crazy, but he never actually thinks that he's crazy. And even when he tries to show to the world, to them, that he's gone back to his normal life, that he's gone back into his box and he's put all this away, it's only to throw them off because he's so dead set now. And he knows so well that this is not real. This is not right. And he is literally willing to risk his life to get to the end. And just like that, the moment where you realize you've reached that threshold.
Yeah.
And that they could actually like build like it's actually a real threshold from one world to another. And to have him step through it is just, it's such a beautiful metaphor. And the sweater he's wearing at the end is, I love this.
Choice. And it also solidified Jim Carrey, right? We knew he was talented. And you know, every comedian I think since has tried to pull a Jim Carrey where they do their, you know, and I think I don't think he was the first to do it, but I think he did it in the biggest way where you had this guy who was so known for zany comedy and then gave you something subdued and studied and crafted. And I think that what's so special about his is that it really uses the best of Jim Carrey. Like it's not like he had to be a different person. He just dialed himself down, because I think that Jim Carrey is so good at giving you an everyman, right? Mm-hmm. And just a zany everyman. And I think that Truman's quirks and like it's a very charming character, and you really love him and you really feel for him. And you know, I just loved his performance in that movie. I thought it was so good.
Yeah.
So good.
And the movie itself, tonally, I think this film is unique. You know, Maybe it's the script, maybe it's the casting, maybe it's the world. As much as this world doesn't make sense, right? That they've turned Burbank into a movie studio, basically a television studio, doesn't make sense. The science behind it doesn't make sense. The tech, like nothing about it makes sense. And if the story wasn't done so gracefully, and if the message and the feeling of it wasn't so consistent, the style. I think it would have been really terrible. It would have been goofy. There's so much potential for it to slide into the realm of the absurd. And I think because it stays so on point and so with Truman and his journey, that it becomes this beautiful quilt of stuff.
And also, I think the other strength of it, to that point, is it allows you to establish Truman's world without, like, you kind of... It's very good about, you know, knowing when to tell you what. Like, the first act, as I remember it, is literally, you know, you get the opening Christoph monologue. And you get the sense that Truman's world is seen through a lot of very strange angles. Like, you know, you're watching it through, the camera goes to his dashboard, like the dashboard of his car. You're seeing him driving through the, and that's, you're like, that's not a regular shot. That's very strange, but okay. And, you know, but there's never a sense until you get back to Christoph, I think probably like 20, 30 minutes in, where they're doing the news broadcast on him. It's kind of the second act reveal, that he is part of this TV show. So to their credit, they are able to establish a very grounded world, and then they blow that world up.
Yeah.
And haven't even blown it up for Truman yet, are just blowing it up for you, the audience, so you can have a deeper understanding of why things are so off.
Right.
Truman Show is such a gem. Who directed that again? I always forget this director's name. It's not Andrew Niccol.
No. Peter Weir.
Andrew Niccol. Peter Weir.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Peter Weir. Isn't Peter Weir also the name? Oh, Bob Weir is in the Grateful Dead. I was like, it sounds familiar.
Yeah, what he, and this, I feel like this was kind of like a Mad Max style departure from him, for him, for Peter Weir. I don't remember anything else in this film.
Commander.
Yeah.
Peter Weir do. Filmography. The Cars That Ate Paris. Dead Poets Society.
Okay.
Master and Commander. He did The Way Back.
It's interesting because all these movies, you know, I if you put these movies together, like Master and Commander and The Truman Show and Fearless, like, I wouldn't put these movies, you know, I wouldn't, you know, no. there's some directors who have a calling card. Maybe Dead Poets Society is the closest to Truman Show in terms of tone. That's but like,
curious. Yeah, I'll have to, I don't know anything about them. I'm going to read up on them.
Yeah. Look at them. Cause
how you end up doing these things. I mean, maybe he becomes a go-to director for things, is somehow, you know, I mean, you know, a guy is technically on point, and
he's given you some great hits. He's given you some good movie. Witness. I mean, come on. Like, he's great. That's amazing. That's amazing. And really, really good on him. I remember about the Truman Show the most was it was one of the first DVDs I ever bought when my mom got me a portable DVD player.
Yeah.
And so I just remember the Christmas of that picture.
Mm-hmm.
Just blew my mind. Like, all the colors of all the costumes were just like so crisp. And I remember them putting him up against the, there's those two brothers.
I love that. The way they advertise every morning is they corner him against the billboard, and it's like a different ad on the wall.
Every time. It's so good. I just remember the crispness of the signs and of the brothers like foreheads. It was just like crazy.
Yeah.
I love that movie. I
hope that we as a society now have hit the wall and gotten out of the boat, and we're standing at that threshold, and 2021 will be the other side.
The other side of the wall. The Truman Show. The Truman Show.
I mean, think about it, Truman. If everybody is in on it, I'd have to be in on it too. Oh. I'm not in on it, Truman, because there is no it.
I love that. I love that. Good choice, man. Good choice for getting out of 2020 and going into 2021. Quick side note, Robin Williams was considered for the role of Truman, but Weir cast Carrie after seeing him in Ace Ventura because Carrie's performance reminded him of Charlie Chaplin.
Interesting.
Brilliant.
Makes a lot of sense.
That's actually,
to be fair, I would have watched the shit out of that with Robin Williams.
Oh, Robin Williams would kill that. He would have murdered that. That actually would have been,
he would have been a little too old. Jim Carrey is young.
Yeah,
he looks young, at least in this
movie. Was, at that time, because it was that 96, so that means he was just 30. No, gee, he was 20. Oh my God. Wait, no, 97, 90, because he was born. No, he was born in. Sorry. No, he was 30. He was in his 30s. He was 34.
34. Okay. I texted you the other day because I realized that he was 33 in when Batman Forever.
Oh my God, which is so crazy.
The same age that he was when he was doing Batman.
When he was doing Batman. But that's what you get when you start your career, you know, at the age of 15 or 16. Yeah.
And I think him and Robin Williams have a very similar thing going on. We talk about Robin Williams a lot.
Oh yeah, we love Robin because he's the best.
Because he's the best. And I think him and Jim Carrey do the same. I want to call it a sad clown thing, but it's not. It's tender clown.
It's
I want to make people happy, and I'm so sad that not everybody can be happy. And like, there's such a intelligence to their emotional understanding that I think a lot of comedians don't have. And it comes out in Good Will Hunting. It comes out in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Like, you look for these moments that these actors can really be who they are. You know, you can tell there's such an honesty to these emotional trials that they go through in these movies, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insanely honest, and I'm glad you brought up Eternal Sunshine, because we'll talk about that movie.
I almost chose that one too. Just looking at after I saw Truman Show, I was like, well, maybe Eternal Sunshine then, but no, that I'm sure I'll choose it for something.
No, we got to bring that in because it really is.
Yeah,
I think there's a video,
and you guys can go try to find it on YouTube. When I was in like it was like sophomore year of college or something like that. I was home and I was bored. And I had my little mini DV camcorder. I recorded myself playing on the piano the theme from Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Of course you did.
Just for fun. And I made a YouTube channel and I put it up. It's the only thing I ever posted. It's from, you know, 10 years ago plus. It's got, I looked at it the other day, it's got something like almost 300,000 views on it.
I love it. I love it.
Some lady emailed me asking if she could play it at her wedding. It's like, people like it. So go find it. It's out there somewhere, me playing the theme from Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind on the piano.
It's brilliant.
All right, well, here we go. 51 minutes. Let's get to choice two here.
Let's get to choice two. So my movie, I think you guess it right away. I'll give you a hint to this, and so the hint is that one of the scripts I'm working on right now is pretty much a horror movie. So I'd say more psychological thriller. I think the best way to describe it is like if The Uninvited, Hateful Eight, and this movie had a baby, it would be the script that I'm working on. So I've been watching a lot of horror recently, and I watched Hereditary.
The Uninvited is one of them.
The Uninvited is one
how,
of them.
How scary is the moment in The Uninvited with the crying woman downstairs?
Oh my God, I hate it. I hate
for
it
for
so
an
much.
Old movie that's like black and white, and the characters are. It's like a very like not scary era of filmmaking. That one moment in the middle of the night, they wake up and there's just a woman downstairs crying.
It's terrible. The whole movie is really powerful.
Sorry, I had to cut in because
no, please cut in.
Just thinking about it.
No, dude, it's been a ride because I've done and you know I hate horror movies, so this has been a really interesting. The way I've gotten around it has been reading the scripts as I watch the movie. That has been super helpful. Not because it tells me what's coming up next, but more just because it reminds me that it's a movie.
Yeah.
That and that I think helps to ground me. So I actually rewatched Hereditary, went back.
Are you buying those A24 like bound screenplays?
No, dude. Here's what's crazy. Most PDFs you can find on like Script Slug for free. Like they're
Absolutely. I just know A24 is selling them as like books that people can buy and collect. And Hereditary is one of them, and Get Out's probably another one.
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's tons. But yeah. So it definitely, this movie, I wanted to look for, I was like, okay, getting, you know, 2020 has been nothing short of a horror film. And so I want something that has that catharsis. What is the movie that gets you out of the thing? What is the movie that is people surviving a moment and surviving it not without scars? Do you know what I mean? Like surviving it not without scars, not without their own wounds. And I was thinking of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Sarah had said that, and I was like, oh, you know, that actually could be good, but I think this one is a little better and a little more akin to the moment that we're in right now. And you'll guess it pretty much right away. So I'm going to read you the opening title card. I'm going to read it to you. The first thing you see on a black screen is, there are thousands of miles of tunnels beneath the continental United States. Abandoned subway systems, unused service routes, and deserted mine shafts. Many have no known purpose at all. And the movie is?
Is it Tremors?
No, it could. Oh, that would have been a good one. That would have been so fun. Fire.
There's like so many movies that are kind of...
kind of have that. Do you want me to keep going and see if you can... The first thing you see, let me give you this. The first thing you see is a Hands Across America promo, like the old ones from MTV.
You're gonna have to give it to me. There's too many options.
Oh, okay. And then we cut to a little girl at a carnival with her father and mother. Boardwalk, black family, 1986.
Tell you what.
Us.
Oh, is it Us? Yeah.
Us. The movie is Us.
When I was a kid, I went to that boardwalk with my parents. I wandered off. I don't know why, I just did. I ended up in that hall of mirrors. There was another girl in there. She looked like me. Exactly like me.
It opens on a title card about tunnels?
Tunnels. Because yeah, the first thing you see is there are thousands of miles of tunnels beneath the continental United States.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Us. Okay. Good choice. I want to hear.
So here's why I love. So first of all, I'm one of those people who actually I love Get Out. I think Get Out is so brilliant and mm-hmm. funny and groundbreaking, right? That was really this thing that we kind of take for granted now because we are in this kind of crazy tidal wave of it, where it's like, you know, black people with genre. We've never really experienced that, you know, in a mainstream way. There's always been black people in genre films. Like I think back to like Tales from the Crypt. There was like one episode that was not Tales from the Crypt. Oh my God. Tales from the Hood. I think it's Tales from the Hood. I got to think about it. What it is. I'm forgetting the title of this thing. If somebody knows the title, please tweet it at us. Tales from the Hood. Yes. Mm-hmm. That was kind of this perfect, very smart blend of horror and culture. And that was in like 95, but we haven't had that much. We hadn't been having that much,
yeah,
you know, genre until Jordan Peele comes out with Swingin' with Get Out. And right. I think Get Out is a brilliant film. I love Us. There's something about Us that just strikes me on a deeper level. And it's funny because Get Out, I actually have more experience in the world with Get Out because he and like just that idea of going to meet your white girlfriend's family is something that I've experienced often. And it is always exactly like that.
Yeah.
And it's not even about them being like the family might be the nicest people in the world, but there's just that especially when I was growing up, there was just that cultural difference. And there were so many questions and there were so many, do you know?
No, totally. What I love about the situation of Get Out is the kind of blur of the metaphor where it feels like they're saying something very specific about black experience.
Yes.
But really, once you dig, like the more you dig in, the more different paths of what they could be saying. Like, there's a million different things to take out of it.
Yeah, there's tons, and it's so deep, and I think Get Out was like the perfect, you know, kind of coming out party for Jordan Peele as a horror director or as a director of genre, because Get Out is incredibly funny, but it's also decently scary. And is this kind of perfect blend of who he is. And then with Us, he goes and does something that's a lot more mature, that feels just a lot more subtle and just well constructed. And I know there are people who are more in the Get Out camp than the Us camp, but I just find Us so fascinating on so many levels. And also because I think that the great thing that I love that not just Jordan Peele but smart horror filmmakers right now are doing is not truly finding, you know, knowing exactly what the structure is for themselves, mm-hmm. but not giving the audience the whole structure, right? Don't tell us, you know, there's no point at which somebody exposits, you know, the white people are taking over your brains and blah, blah, blah. It's never that clear. That's in Get Out. I mean, in Us, it's never just exposited what is happening.
Right.
You never just until the end, really, when spoiler alert, when the two women are fighting, you never really get that kind of information dump. It's just, you just kind of figure it out as you go along. And that pulls you in. I love a good slow burn. I love a good pacing, and Us does that. But why I really loved it and love it for a movie that is about getting out of 2020 is because I think so much of the clash of 2020 is the haves versus the have-nots.
You saw their new car, right? You have to do it. You just have to get that thing to fuck with me, too.
Yes, mission accomplished. Don't run inside.
And we've talked about it many times, right? The people who are hurting and suffering and just at the whim of the people above, and they finally decide to rebel. And knowing that our, you know, again, spoiler, our lead character actually is from the underground. Do you know what I mean? Like, is that person who made it out and is trying to stay out and survives in that fashion. So, you know, the family survives, but is surviving with a matriarch who has some serious trauma to her. Like, there's some dirt under those nails, you know what I mean? And it's just, I think that it was, I was watching it and I was like, oh my God, no, this is 2020. A year where we were all like, I'm looking at my cat because he's trying to get out of my, hold on, I have to let my cat out of this room. Side note, guys, my cat, so we had to take him to the vet today, and he, normally we're able to go in to the vet with him back home in New York, but because it's COVID and things are fucked, we, you know, it's kind of like a drive-through vet drop-off, so you like park in the parking lot, drop him off, the vet takes him, and then they'll bring him out when he's done. And you know, normally he's a very sweet cat, and you know, normally we're able to be in the room with him, and that calms him down. And so even when he's getting blood taken, he's calm, he's okay. But yesterday when we tried to take him, he was just not having it, apparently, when we weren't there. So today Sarah took him back today, and we had to give him gabapentin to calm him down. So he is like a drowsy mess. He's just like stumbling. It's very sweet. It's very sweet to see. But point back to us. It's the perfect encapsulation 2020. I really, you know, just that thing where like you couldn't, you know, this thing happens and then you can't put it down anymore. You can't ignore it. Right. And, you know, in the beginning of us, you know, the interactions of the family, there's so many little idiosyncrasies that you notice about this family and how they operate that get exploited through this experience, and their interaction with their, you know, the husband's work friend played by Tim Heidecker, who's freaking hysterical. And obviously Elizabeth Moss, who's one of our best actors that we have.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's so many little things that just like, they let go, they let slide. Do you know what I mean? That are just like not addressed in their interactions and the interactions between them. And then almost like that, like you said, that Pandora's box, the sum total of that arrives in the form of the tethered.
It's us.
We don't have anything here. This is our summer home. Okay. We just got in today. So
once upon a time, there was a girl, and the girl had a shadow. The two were connected, tethered together.
Right? These doppelgangers who came up from the ground and are not going to let them forget the sins of the past. And I just, and the idea that she, by the, you know, the mother, played by Lupita Nyong'o in what I truly think will go down as one of the best, alongside Toni Collette in Hereditary, one of the best performances in a horror film ever. I watched these two women do what they did in these movies, and I'm like, I don't understand.
It's incredible. I mean, the visual expression. I don't think there's a movie with better, like, you don't, she doesn't need to say anything, right? Just the close up shot on her and her,
oh my God.
She's got these wide eyes, and there's just like this, she can just change.
Who she is as oh my God, I'm going to forget this character's name in this movie, as both characters that she plays, right? Because she plays the mother, who, you know, is presented as like this wonderful, you know, sweet, beautiful, woman, you know, And then she also, Adelaide and Red are her two characters.
Hmm.
You know, and she just gives them both such inner life and such, you know, there's so many clues about who she is with both these characters. And that she does, that she puts in her performance. You know, you just watch her dig her way out of this hole with her family, and they have to fight with everything they have to get out of here. The son, the daughter, like, they're all in danger. They all have to kill people. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just climbing over bodies to get out of the fire. And they finally do. And then ends on that shot of just realizing, oh my God, you know, Adelaide isn't who we thought she was. And it's not like an evil moment. Do you know what I mean? There's many ways to interpret that last smile that she gives her son in the front of the car, but how I've always interpreted it, you know, has been like just a smile of we did it. We got out.
Yeah.
You know, we got out. And for her, that is a journey that sadly, you know, took however long her life, you know, from the moment that she, as a little girl, replaced herself with Adelaide, right, with the real Adelaide.
Yeah.
You know, so whether or not she is allowed to feel that way is up to the audience. And again, because the last shot of the movie really is not just her face, but the rolling hills of doppelgangers forming this human chain.
Yeah.
Right, the thing still exists, and that's kind of how I feel about getting out of 2020 and into 2021. There is so much hope on the horizon. The thing still exists, right? The thing is still there. It's still present, but we have defeated. We have done. We've gotten over one hoop, gotten mm-hmm. through, you know, one obstacle. Yeah, I just love the visual language of us. I'm a sucker for the color red. I'm a sucker for fire. I'm a sucker for, like, there's just so many cool things being done. Oh, yeah, dude.
I didn't just need to kill you. I needed to make a statement that the whole world would see. It's our time now. Our time. And to think, if it weren't for you, I never would have danced at all.
It's very thought out. I have to go back and watch it because I haven't seen it since it came out. So it's been about 2 years since I've actually seen the film. And I never really did a deep dive on, you know, even going back, just watching it a second time, knowing how it ends, I think would enlighten me to a lot of the structure of it and what's actually going on. So I definitely need to do it again. But I see somehow, despite a complete disparity in tone and everything, there actually is a lot of similarities in this.
Oh my God.
Two movies.
It's complete. No. I was actually just thinking that too, dude. It's very similar. I mean, because I think that they, you know, I go back to, you know, the Dan Harmon story circle, the hero's journey, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of these, I think most good horror movies do follow this of a hero stepping into a larger world.
Yeah.
Because that's what a horror movie is, right? You step into it's
revealing that the comfortable place that you were is not so comfortable. You know,
yes.
There's a sinister underbelly and conquering it, being able to rise above it.
Because, and think about this, because there is you talk about how Truman Show in different hands could have been a different movie. Truman Show could easily be a horror film. Oh my God, are you kidding absolutely. Me?
Well, to me, as I'm watching it, I'm like, this could have been, you know, a Twilight Zone or Black.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this could be, it's such a scary concept of what it, you know, because everybody thinks about at some point, you know, what if everybody's faking it? What if this is all just fake? What if this is not at all what it seems? And it's a very unbelievable sort of concept that they would build, you know, a county sized TV studio for one person. But the idea is there, right? The metaphor is there.
Everything about it.
And in us, it's the same thing. It's hey, like where you are and who you are and who's around you is not actually what it seems. and you're going to have to confront what it actually is if you want to grow over it.
That's exactly right. And I think that is the best thing we can do with 2020 is look at it as a year of reflection and a year of a lot of lessons, a lot of very, very lessons that cost us a lot to learn. You know, I was going to say costly, but I'm not sure. I mean, maybe that is the right use of that word. But the most important thing is, what do we do with those lessons? And I think in both The Truman Show and Us, you get the sense that your central characters, you know, are going to, you know, you return to stasis having changed. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that that is important, very important, yeah. You know.
I would agree. I've been reading this book. I think you should read it. I think you'd glean a lot from it. It's called Mindset by Carol Dweck.
Interesting.
I tend to find these like kind of self-helpy books, you know, Malcolm Gladwell-esque things that posit a thesis and just kind of present anecdotes and different things.
Yeah.
But this book, what it surmises basically is there's two mindsets, a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. It's like how you approach the world, and it's built from the time you're an infant on. Is developed, and a fixed mindset being one where you look at yourself and see, you know, immutable traits.
Yep.
I am this, and if I can't do this, then I failed because it can't change what I'm capable of and what I can do. And then a growth mindset being the opposite of that, where every time you fail, it's just an opportunity to learn more, to do better, to grow. And it's a simple concept, but it's been very eye-opening in terms of how I've approached creative work, where like you kind of come from a place where you think either you have it or you don't, and there's not the blood, sweat, and tears maybe isn't as necessary as whatever. And I think especially in this past year, 2020, you know, looking at it as, wow, like we haven't had a choice, but we've been forced to either, you know, put up or shut up. Like we've been forced to step up and face it or get completely steamrolled.
Yep.
And the daily challenges that come along with everything that has been this year has kind of just totally shifted my perspective of how I'm living day to day.
Oh yeah.
And it's got me excited. It's got me excited for the future, if I'm going to be honest.
No, I think there's a lot of reason to be excited. And, you know, the more people I see taking these shots, getting vaccinated, the more people I see, you know, doing good things for their community and just mm-hmm. you know, giving back a little bit. I think that is all we can do, all we should be doing. You know, just keep going on that. Keep putting that energy out into the world.
And one day the ground will open and reclaim Mitch McConnell. And
oh my God,
we can all move the fuck on.
There's a lot of tunnels in which we can put Mitch McConnell.
A lot of tunnels that Mitch McConnell could go in.
There's tons. So guys, listen, you know, I think we both, you know, I speak for both me and Alex. You know, this year has been absolutely insane. And, as we go into the new year, we are just so thankful that, so many people have decided to join us on this journey.
Yeah, it's been pretty amazing.
It's been pretty.
Thank you for coming along. Nick's used to being out there in the public eye, having fans and an audience. This is kind of new for me. So I've enjoyed the support and the conversations and the everything that's kind of come along with it. And I hope that 2021, you know, that you'll come along with us for the next step in our journey here on Little Justice.
Yeah. So, you know, please stay in touch. Tweet at us. Hit us up on Instagram. Whatever you got to do. But you know, I think there's only one thing left to say, Alex. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Little justice, little justice, little justice. Fuck yeah.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.